KMOX, and your service. Welcome to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline. Now, Mike Miller on KMOX.
Yes, folks, welcome, and thanks for stopping by. We'll be taking the Good Gardening Stroll shortly, but right now you can call 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Questions, comments, concerns, ideas, or whatever. And Alex will be answering the phone, and all he needs is your first name and where you're calling from. He doesn't really care what you're calling about. He does care, but he doesn't care as far as needing that information himself. Saturday mornings, wow, great. Roundtable discussion. What's impacting your backyard, your front yard, your side yard, your specialty garden space? How are those houseplants doing since you put them outside? I saw a palm tree that somebody set outside and they put it in direct sun. It was sunburnt. And what is potting mixes? I had actually a question sent me email-wise. A lady wanted to grow some things in pots, and she said, what's the difference between potting mix and potting soil? So I explained to her how to improve your soil so you can get good drainage and have a good, healthy soil. How about shearing and pruning this time of year? Don't do it because you can cause some sunburn on the remaining foliage that's exposed. And bugs, oh, they're really starting to get out there, and diseases as well. Use the information that I share with you, and you can make the decisions are obviously yours. So hopefully it'll help solidify, or you'll go, that guy doesn't know what he's talking about, and I don't care, I'm going to do it this way. And that's fine. It's up to you. And by the way, this is your show, and I appreciate you inviting me into your home, car, wherever you happen to be listening. Another very important player, as I said before, is Alex. He's the producer, answering the phone, and all kinds of other things as well. By the way, I'm Mike Miller. I've been hosting the Garden Hotline since 1994, and I can come to your home and do landscape consultations, which I call walk-and-talks. And consequently, you can go to my website at MikeMillerDesigns.com. On the homepage, there's my email address and phone number. Email is probably the easiest way to get a hold of me. Phones, sometimes it's like ping pong, back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. But anyway, let's get moving. And today's Good Gardening Stroll is brought to you by St. Louis Composting. Oh, and by the way, walk and talk today after the show, first Kirkwood and then Melville. And this past week on Wednesday, I was in Weldon Springs, kind of a cool area. All the neighborhood was well developed. Guinevere and Galahad and all kinds of really fancy smancy names were on the streets. Well, as I turned, I was surprised. Oh, the parks are open. Well, the first thing you pass is a tennis courts and then multiple ball fields. I parked near a fresh pile of wood chips. The area was designated dog park by permit. Welcome, Leash Less in St. Louis, Southwest City Dog Park. This is in Wilmore Park. It's right, it basically is parallel to the River de Pere on the, let's see, would that be the north side of River de Pere, or would that be, yes, it would be. And enclosed the dog park with metal fencing, which runs, it looks good. And right outside, there's two really good-sized catalpa trees, and they have so many, let's say, as we call them, ladies' cigars when we were kids. Why we call them that, I don't have any idea. They were dangling in evidence of earlier white flowers. Planting along the entrance, there's some yellow-orange daylilies there. A sign reminds, please do not walk in the garden and keep your dog out as well. Liriope with dark green foliage really looked nice. A plot of iris, well, they look good foliage-wise, not turning brown yet, but they had their flowers showing earlier. There's some woodland ferns, and there's at the edge of a burning bush sitting there, two different varieties of hosta, some more liriope, and there is a hydrangea. This hydrangea doesn't look so good, so it should probably be chucked out. And snuggling with some yews, which are right next to the burning bush, on the opposite, on those are more hostas and everything else. It really is kind of an interesting combination of plant material going into a dog park. On the opposite side of the gate, there's some more iris, some blooming hydrangea, Stella de Oro daylilies. There's a pair of Alberta spruce, well-budded sunflowers just waiting to explode. There's also some, guess what, hardy hibiscus waiting to explode as well. There's across the fence along River de Pere, a group of Canada geese. They just flew in and were having breakfast. I'm not exactly sure what they were eating, but they were enjoying it. And there was some liatris along there. There's some pencil boxwood. As I said before, there's a hardy hibiscus and three bunches of purple cone flowers. That's the end of the garden where it kind of runs in the fence that runs along River de Pere. And somebody recently had done some care and maintenance because they'd pulled some weeds out, cut off some finished foliage, and it was kind of laying there. I guess they're waiting for the mower to come along and guess what? Chop it up and turn it into organic materials. And an alternative, there's three different gates that you can go into. You go into the main gate, and then you can go left, you can go straight, or you can go right. At this dog park, if you go right, you can take your dog in there and wash it, which I'd never paid attention to if dog parks have a place to wash your dog. But it says water with no soap, please. And though there was no dogs there today, the area was barkingly fun to view. I can imagine what it's like because this is a huge dog park. Some of them are nice and everything else, but this is the biggest one I have ever seen. So why don't we take a call before we take a break? And let's go to Mark's yard. Hi, Mark. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Very good.
Thanks for taking my call. Hey, my wife's got some potted hibiscus. It's on our deck, and it's the kind that has a long stem, and I think there may be a plant or two together, and they're like twisted up, and then they got a ball or so at the top. Not really a ball, but it's blooming at the top. Anyway, the leaves are like turning yellow, and she did see some little mites or lice or some sort of little bugs on one of them, but a couple of them, the leaves are turning yellow. They're out there in full sun. She waters them like twice a day. Not sure what's going on there.
Too much water, you know, that might be the problem. But historically, this time of year, where it's a twisted, whether it's a twisted trunk hibiscus, regular hibiscus, or anything else, I've had several emails this past week about people whose hibiscus are dropping foliage. Usually it's going to be the interior foliage, and that's just sort of the natural growth process as the plants are outside. So I wouldn't be overly concerned with it. If she saw some kind of insect there, more than likely is not what's causing the yellowing of the foliage.
Okay, so I heard you say too much water.
Yeah, she doesn't need to water twice a day. Basically, you know, just tell her to look at the inside of the pot, and when the potting mix starts shrinking away and you can see a gap between the inside of the pot and the potting mix, then she needs to water thoroughly at that time. But twice a day is a little bit too much.
All right, and you think that may be causing the leaves turn yellow?
Well, not necessarily, because like I said, I've had several emails this past week with people experiencing the hibiscus leaf drop. And yellowing is, you know, the occurrence of that. So I think it may be contributing a little bit, but it's not the cause by any means.
Okay. All right. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. And let's see if we can get Rick in before we take a break. Rick, how are you today?
Hey, Mike. I'm good. Hey, I'm with the Madison County Soil and Water Conservation District, and I just wanted to shed a little light on this dust storm that's coming across the country.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah, it's really not dust. It's soil particles. Dust is what you wipe off your furniture in the wintertime with a rag. But these are soil particles. They're actually the size of silt. Now, silt particles are about the consistency of brown talcum powder. And silt, the definition of silt is actually a soil particle size. And these silt particles that are suspended are that particle size. When you think of the Sahara Desert, you usually think of these big, gigantic sand dunes, and the wind blows these sand dunes into these forms over there. But the sand particles are way too big and way too heavy
right.
to move by the wind. And so the finer textured silt particles are picked up by the wind, they're blown across the ocean, and they settle out here. So the wind is actually sorting them. It's kind of similar to what happened in the 1930s. In the U.S. with the Great Dust Bowl on the Great Plains, it's the same conditions. Wind picked up the silt particles and blew it all around and caused these problems. So it shouldn't be called a dust storm. It's a silt storm.
Well, great. Well, thanks for the insight. That's perfect. So people don't need to necessarily be worried about this whole thing other than, like, protecting themselves from inhaling or anything along that line.
Correct. Yeah, correct. the silt, it might form a little layer of dust on your silt on your plants.
Right.
But if you water it in the rain, it'll wash it away. Might add one more thing. In Madison County, most of the soils here are primarily composed of silt.
Right.
Now, people call it clay soils, and they have a lot of clay in them. But if you break down the particle size, they're mostly silt. And clay particles are even smaller. So adding another layer of silt to it really doesn't do any harm. So it's not a bad thing. There's no chemicals in there. It's not acidic or anything like
right.
that.
Well, great. Well, thanks for the insight. And myself personally, when I was in the Air Force at March Air Force Base, in Riverside, California, the desert's right there too. And we had some dust storms, a couple times just like this, only not dust, obviously silt there as well. So thank you. I greatly appreciate your information.
Yes, sir, Mike. Talk to you later.
Okay. Mike Miller, KMOS Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
Welcome back to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline. Once again, Mike Miller on KMOX.
Yes, folks, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. We have some lines open, so if you'd like to call. One thing, though, water. Your plants, your lawn, your trees, your shrubs, everything is, probably fairly dry, so just watch out. The neat thing is, too, if you water right before it rains, it's actually perfect because your watering has softened the ground, so then the rainwater can penetrate deeper. Because if the water that you put down, like running just for a few, let's say 15 or 20 minutes, an irrigation system or a sprinkler, that doesn't do any good because most of the water actually evaporates before it gets, penetrates down in the soil. And if you do it that way, just go out right after you finish watering for 15 or 20 minutes and take a hand trowel or something and just dig down a little bit and see how far down the water has gone. If it hasn't gone down multiple inches, then it's absolutely doing no good at all and actually causing more problems because it's keeping a lot of the plant material roots on the surface, and that makes it a lot more prone to the weather circumstance. So let's see, where do we need to go? Let's go out to Fenton and go into Vince's yard. Hi, Vince.
Yeah, Mike, how you doing?
Very good.
I listen to you every Saturday morning, and so I have time to think about what you talk. Every year around in the fall, what I normally would do is throw out new seed, and if there are any weeds, I use weed and feed spray on, and I take care of them. But I always hear about you talking about putting pre-emergent down in August. And I wondered why that would be better than what I've been doing.
Well, a weed and feed kills, let's say, perennial type weeds, broadleaf weeds that are actually growing. What there is a whole series of cool season annual weeds that germinate in August, and that's what the pre-emergent is killing.
Uh-huh. And the weed and feed wouldn't kill it?
No, unless they're actually up and germinating. But what the pre-emergent does is kill them at the point of germination.
Well, so I wait until like September, October. Wouldn't they have come up by then?
Yes, they would, definitely.
Because the thing about it is when putting down pre-emergent, obviously that kind of nixes my new seed.
Right, it certainly does. But the annual cool season weeds that emerge in late August is like henbit, chickweed, annual bluegrass, prickly lettuce, those type, shepherd's purse. So that's what you're trying to get rid of. But, the weed and feed will not kill the annual bluegrass because that's a grass, and, weed and feeds only kill broadleaf weeds or broadleaf plants, let's put it that way.
Well, I have a fescue lawn, so I don't know if that makes any difference.
No, not really.
Uh-huh.
But if you're happy with the way your lawn looks, just tell Mike Miller to go to it.
No, I would never do that. I was just curious. I was just curious as to whether or not I should try to put down pre-emergent. And you'd use the same pre-emergent that you use in the spring, right?
Yes, exactly, because there's two different systems of, weeds. As far as annual weeds, one's warm season. They basically are exploding right now. In the cool season, they've basically all died off, just through because of the temperatures.
Another question, Mike. I hear you told someone last week that they took out a tree and they wanted to put down a lawn, and you told them they couldn't do it. I want to let you know I kind of did that. Last April, I raked out, after they took out a redbud tree and ground out the stump,
mm-hmm.
I raked out all the the wood, and then I put down a bunch of compost, that black gold, and then I put down a bunch of fescue sod, and I'm in the second summer. It still looks fine.
Well, that's that's great. Redbud trees have relatively small trunks. You know, the person I told, they had a large, like it was an oak or something, with a huge, huge trunk. So that's going to be the difference. So, I mean, that's great that you had great success. And I still don't recommend doing it, just for the most part. But you've had good success with two things that I say don't do.
Well, I did dig out as many of the surface roots as I could before I put down anything. But it seems to be doing well, and it's not settling. So.
Well, perfect.
Okay, thank you.
Sure. And that's Vince from Fenton. Now let's go to Dan's yard. Hi, Dan.
Hi there. How are you guys?
Very good.
So I have a few questions. Hopefully they'll be quick. So we're moving into a house that has a sprinkler system, and I'm not sure how often it should be set to water. So that was one. And then when I cut the grass, how tall should it be at this time of the year? And then should I bag it or just mulch it down? And then the last one was, we had a roof put on, and they put tarps down, and it looks like some of the bushes are dying. I'm assuming it's because of the tarp held the heat in, but maybe you could answer that.
Yeah, it could be a result, the physical, let's say, nuss of the tarp on top of them. So it may kill them. It may just, aesthetically kill them. They may recover from a standpoint of being alive. Irrigation system-wise, less often rather than running it every day, maybe every 3 days for longer periods of time. So every 3 days for like 45 minutes or so would be the way I would do it, as opposed to every day for 15 minutes, which would equal a total of 45 minutes in 3 days. So, and I can't remember what your third question was.
Oh, how tall should the grass be cut, and should I bag it?
What kind of grass is it?
Bluegrass.
I would probably cut it about 3.5 inches.
Okay. And would you bag it or just mulch it?
If you've got a mulching mower, you can just go ahead and mulch it. If you've got, if you don't have a mulching mower, you just have a regular mower, then bag it.
Okay. Thanks for your help.
Sure. My pleasure. And now let's head out to Chesterfield and go into Pam's yard. Hi, Pam.
Hi, Mike. I have a question. We have a small hydrangea tree that we would like to move to a different spot just because it's overhanging some azalea bushes. Would the fall be a good time to do that, and how do we actually go about doing it?
Basically, what you want to do is about a day or two before you're going to move it, water the area really well. Okay. I don't know how. Go out about almost, let's say, 18 inches to 2 feet, and cut the. That's where the root ball is going to be. So you're going to go down one spade deep, and go down that deep, and probably, I wouldn't do it too early in the fall, but fall is probably the best time to do it for transplanting, because the ground is warm, and then that will encourage root system growth, and then your hydrangea gets to go to sleep for the wintertime, as opposed to doing it in the spring.
Okay, and then the spot that we're going to put it in, dig down, what, about 18 inches or so?
No, just make sure the top of the root ball is above the surrounding ground.
Okay.
So you want the hole 3 times the diameter, but only about 80% as deep. And then put about 2 to 3 inches of mulch around it, and try to keep as much mulch away from the actual trunk as you possibly can.
Okay, great. Thanks so much.
Sure. She must have birds. I kept hearing twittering. Let's see. Where do we need to go? How about Steve's yard? Hi, Steve.
Yeah, I have a umbrella pine. Would that be get too big to put next to the foundation?
Is this a hardy variety?
It's just a regular umbrella pine, I think, of Sciadopitus verticillata.
I would say, umbrella pine. I don't know if that's going to be a hardy variety for this region. I mean, you could give it a try if you want to, but now what was your question in relationship to planting it?
Do you think that would get too big to put alongside the foundation of a house?
Yes, definitely. Anything, I don't recommend putting anything, within 10 feet of a foundation of a house, regardless, because it becomes problematic from the standpoint, the backside, as let's say this thing, you know, that Mike Miller doesn't know what he's talking about, and this turned out to be, you know, hardy and everything else. So consequently, the backside of it, which is next to the house, is not going to get enough light, and it's going to drop its needles, and it's not going to look very good. And so then it's just, you know, it's not really good. So you want to put it out so it's going to get full exposure to the sun as much as possible.
Okay. I didn't know. I guess they get pretty good root ball on them too, probably, huh?
Well, I mean, it depends upon how big it's going to be. But, you know, any plant is going to have problems when you plant it too close as far as the root systems pushing on the foundation a little bit. And especially if there's a fissure or a crack in the foundation that may be slight, it could increase the width of the crack. But that's why, another reason why I don't like to plant close to foundations.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. And I'm assuming this, I'm not sure if this umbrella pine, maybe a tanyosha pine, what I would call. But anyway, yeah, keep it away from your house. Mike Miller, KMOS Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
Welcome back to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline. Once again, Mike Miller on KMOX.
Talk about welcome back. Welcome back, the Cardinals. Thank goodness. And let's head out to Baldwin and go into Mike's yard. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Mike.
Go ahead.
Question for you. I've got two questions. Number one, I bought a bird of paradise from, I think it was Lowell's or Home Depot, one of them. And there's some dahlias that are around it. It gets about 4 to 6 hours of morning sun from the sunrise till about, I don't know, 1 or 2 o'clock in the afternoon. The thing is starting to burn, I think. The leaves curl up, and I was wondering if I water it more, so I take it out of the sun. It's a tropical plant, but I thought this should get a lot of sunlight. The other question I have for you is I have about 8 azalea bushes that I want to plant in the backyard. It's going to get probably, I don't know, maybe 6 hours. And so I bought these bushes, and I want to put them out. I want to, how do I prepare the ground so that it'll accept these bushes? Thanks.
Basically, with the azaleas, they need acidic soil and they need highly organic soil. So compost and peat moss mixed in, create a raised bed. So you want to add enough to make that bed that you're going to plant them in about 3 or 4 inches higher than the surrounding ground, whether it's lawn or whatever it happens to be. Realize that over time, you know, and probably I wouldn't have any problems about, you know, putting some iron sulfate in the ground as well. So no fertilizer or anything else. Just improve the soils. That's the best thing you can possibly do. Bird of paradise, if the leaves are curling up in the heat of the day, that's something that they're naturally going to do. But I'd get it out of that much sun. Probably maybe some morning sun is all it needs. And, you know, with this situation with the sun being so intense. So maybe sun from, let's say, sunrise, which is around 6 in the morning up until noon, and not too much sun after that.
Okay. So compost, you said the root ball should be 2 to 3 inches above the ground?
Yes, right, exactly. And then you're going to mound, you know, then you're going to cover the top of the root ball with mulch. But don't push it up right next to the, let's say, the stems coming up out of the ground for the azaleas. Give them a little bit of breathing room.
Okay, so how wide should I dig the hole?
Three times the diameter of the root ball.
3 times the diameter of the root ball. Okay. Wow, that's pretty big. Okay.
Well, that just makes it, I mean, the lateral growth is that's where the feeder roots are. That makes it much easier for the feeder roots. And depending upon your soil, even if you improve it, if you don't dig the hole big enough, sometimes the roots, you know, are just kind of jammed up by the fact the hole is just, let's say, the same size as the root ball is right now, and it can't push out new growth.
Okay, question for you. They look like they're in some kind of a sack thing. Should I cut that away?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Okay.
So yeah, you don't even if it's breathable, even if it's landscape fabric or anything else, you know, don't do that. And I mean, planting this time of year is not ideal. This is like probably the worst time of year that you could be planting azaleas.
Yeah. So how much water should I give them?
Probably initially, maybe every day for the first, let's say, 7 to 10 days after you put them in. Then after that, just, you know, kind of monitor. You don't want to overwater. and make sure that they get about an inch of water per week.
Okay. An inch of water per week.
Right.
I do. Thanks for having me on your show. It's a great resource.
Well, great. Well, thanks for having me on your show. It's not my show. So anyway, thanks, Mike. And now let's go to, Helen. Hi, Helen. How are you?
Hi. How are you?
Very good.
I'm calling about my tomato plants. Every year I have wonderful tomatoes and tomato plants. I have enough to give everybody. But this year, for some reason, they're not growing too well. They're only a couple of feet, and the leaves are all curled. They almost look like they're deformed or something.
Mm. And you're doing everything that you normally do?
Everything we normally do. I mean, last year my husband was sick, so I only planted one, and that one plant grew to about 7 feet tall. I'm not kidding you. We were giving tomatoes to everybody. But this year they're curled up, and I don't know what to do. I don't know what's wrong.
Tomatoes need a lot of water, so I'm assuming you're watering them almost on a daily basis.
Every day,
okay.
In the evening, after the, you know, so the sun's not too hot, you know.
Well, I'd water them early in the morning. So
early in the morning.
Yeah. And also, you're fertilizing them, correct?
Yeah.
Okay, so you're using tomato food.
No, I don't. I have never, ever used tomato food. That's why I didn't use it this year, because I get so many tomatoes all the time that I don't usually, you know, do that.
Right. Well, I would go ahead, since you're not having good luck with them right now, go get some tomato food. And feed them with that. You can get them by Miracle-Gro. Just mix it up in a bucket of water and pour it around each plant. And probably fertilize
every day?
Them every 2 to 3 weeks.
2 to 3 weeks.
Right.
Okay. Because, I mean, we're just city people, and we just have a little garden here and there, you know. But we have a lot of stuff. But, it's just, this year is just not doing really well.
Well, so, you know, some people are not having great success this year with the tomatoes just in general. Because as I walk around my neighborhood, there's a couple houses that, I watch their tomatoes. And some of them were having really good growth of the tomatoes, but they weren't getting any kind of, let's say, fruit set. And another one,
the
tomato plants look like they're, you know, stunted. Yeah. So,
The critter always, we plant early, girls. Because I like my tomatoes early.
Earlier
I mean,
in the season?
I have already had a tomato.
Oh, really?
But the critter's got it. Yeah, but the critter got it. So, but that's okay. But yeah, I like my early girls because I like them early, you know.
Right.
But I just am just so upset over my, no, everything else is doing fine.
Well, that's
great. We've already had broccoli. And we have a couple little teeny cucumbers, and our cantaloupes are starting to take over.
Well, maybe the early girl wasn't a really good one for this time of year. Maybe get rid of a couple of the early girls and go get a different variety of tomato. Put them in and see what happens.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, well, thank you very much.
Sure. And again, do the tomato food. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
Welcome back to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline. Once again, Mike Miller on KMOX.
How do you pronounce that name?
Mariella.
Oh, Mariella, how are you today? Sorry. Hello, Mariella? Yep. Yeah. Mariella.
Oh, I'm sorry. Hi. My mother has an old-fashioned lilac shrub, and it's probably about 40 years old since she planted it.
Mm-hmm.
And over the years, it got overtaken by a honeysuckle shrub, so I cut it out. And it's pretty spindly, and the leaves on the lilac shrub are pretty healthy. And it did bloom a little bit this year and a little bit last year. So I heard you say don't prune anything this time of year. So how can I get this shrub whipped back in shape?
A 40-year-old lilac to try to get it in shape after it's been... The root system of the honeysuckle is still there if you just cut it off.
Right.
So it's still competing, for the nutrients and everything else. So it's... I wouldn't expect a whole lot out of it. So probably what you should do is just leave it alone. Next year, right after it flowers, go ahead and prune it at that time. And what I would do is take out the largest trunks. I don't know how many trunks are coming up out of the ground. And get rid of like at least one-third of the largest trunks and then see what happens as a result of that. But a 40-year-old shrub is probably kind of on the downhill side of its life.
Yeah, it didn't get a lot of sun for several years. Ooh. The honeysuckle shrub just kind of overtook everything, but I did get it cut out. But I know the root system is still there. So don't touch it this year, and then next year try to prune it.
Right, because it's setting a flower. You know, right now it's setting flower buds for next spring.
Yeah.
So if you start pruning, then you're not going to get any flowers at all.
Okay. Should I fertilize at all, or just wait, or put compost down next spring? Or?
Just compost on top of the ground really doesn't do all that much good. Lilacs like alkaline soil. A little bit of lime in the fall, watered in, and puts, you know, just a little bit of mulch, 1 or 2 inches of mulch, and that's all I do.
Okay. All righty. Okay. Thanks so much.
Sure.
Appreciate it.
And then next spring, as the foliage starts coming out, then you can start doing some fertilizing with just a regular tree and shrub food. And now let's go to Mike's yard. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
Very good.
Good. I own a bubble tile scorching over here in Illinois. And what I experience is up by a resident's handrail or their siding or their shutters, they get these little black dots. And I heard that is some kind of a fungus from mulch.
Exactly. It's called shotgun.
And so how exactly does that work?
Well, basically what it is, it comes in with the mulch. So the mulch hasn't been properly composted, so it has a shotgun fungus. And actually it shoots. You know, so, I mean, you can't be out there and hear it or anything else, but that's exactly what's happening.
Well, it's a real booger to get off. That's
you aren't
for sure.
kidding. So whatever kind of mulch you're using or whatever kind of mulch they're using, just make sure not to use that type again because it's coming in with the mulch.
Gotcha. Second question, transplanting bamboo.
Ooh.
What's the trick there?
Basically, you want to get the rhizome. You don't need a whole lot. When I worked at the botanical garden, I dug out some of the bamboo from the botanical garden because they had to, you know, let's say, control the size. Took it to my parents. I got three, probably like 15-inch sections of root, and I didn't have any above-ground growth at all. And basically what I did is planted in my parents' yard, and then in a few years, it became a neighborhood nightmare.
In what way?
Just so aggressive and invasive. It took about 3 years before it started taking off, but it was sending out all kinds of underground rhizomes and then started popping up all over the place.
Huh. So bamboo is a good idea or a bad idea?
Well, it all depends on you. It's very invasive and aggressive, so that's, you know, the problem. My father hated it. My mother loved it because the birds liked it. And the neighbors, you know, even though we had a big yard in Ellisville, it started, you know, going underneath fences and other things like that and coming up in the neighbor's yard.
Yeah, it seems like the ultimate privacy fence.
True.
Really, if you could control it.
Right. And it's pretty.
But that's the tough part, huh?
Yeah, exactly. Because I mean, I had a client that really wanted a bad. So what we did is we basically did a swimming pool, not a deep swimming pool, but about 18 inches of concrete and walls to keep it confined. And it actually did pretty well for about 10 to 12 years. And then after that, it did start going up underneath, you know, because it butts up against it and then runs down and then comes up on the other side.
So the best time to transplant it?
I would probably, it's really tough stuff. So probably I would do it in the fall, but you could probably do it in the spring, either one.
Okay. Mikey, thank you very much.
Certainly.
Okay. Bye.
And let's see if we can get another call in. Let's go to another Mike's yard. Hi, Mike.
Hey, Mike. How are you?
Good.
Got a question about soil over grass. We had some concrete work done, and the concrete truck had to pull up the yard. And the contractor dumped some dirt down, and I smoothed it out a little. It's zoysia. Is that going to grow up through the dirt or not?
No. Basically, and you shouldn't, you know, any kind of dirt that's just dropped on top of the ground should be mixed up with the existing soil, because wherever that truck was, the soil underneath that is super, super compacted, so you got to really kind of get a rototiller and mix it in with the existing soil that was brought in.
Yeah, it was pretty deep, so that's probably not going to work. I'll probably have to put something down. Zoysia only comes in sod, right?
I mean, there is Zoysia seed, but I've never heard of anybody having success with the seed.
Okay, and I probably don't need to smother the ground. I can just put some pieces down. It'll eventually spread.
Yeah, hopefully.
Thanks but, for the help.
Yeah, I mean, this is really a tough circumstance because you're not able to blend it in with the existing, and so it's just going to... It's going to be a, let's say, you end up selling your house. No, I don't know.
No. All right. I thought that's what you would say, but sorry to hear it. Okay, thanks.
Yeah, that's a tough one. Yeah, when heavy-duty equipment comes across, like right now in our neighborhood, Spire's doing a whole lot of stuff, and they're not driving up equipment, you know, into yards and things, but they're, you know, compacting soil and doing all kinds of other things with various pieces of smaller equipment. And it's going to be a nightmare.
Yeah, they had no choice. They had to get the cement up to the house for a porch. So.
Right. I mean, that's, you know, that's just kind of the circumstance, and that's just kind of what you have to live with, and I'll, you know, just kind of keep your fingers crossed.
Yeah. All right. Hey, thanks a lot. Have a good one.
And let's see. That's probably going to be the last call for this hour. So we do have another hour of the Garden Hotline. So Carol, Doug, Lucy, Marge, Holly, and Joan, you can just hang on there until after the news. And again, watering. Make sure that you don't let your, you know, plant material of any type, your lawn or anything else, get too dry, because recovery from dehydration / drought is very, very difficult. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline.
KMOX and your service. Welcome to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline. Now, Mike Miller on KMOX.
Thank you, Megan. And Megan impressed me during the break there. She showed me a picture, and her hair is as curly as mine. We rule with curly hair. Yes. Oh, where's my, how do I do? Well, let's see. Welcome to the Garden Hotline Tip of the Trial Hour. I'll be giving it shortly, but right now you can call 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Ideas, questions, comments, or concerns. And by the way, thanks for having me on your show. We can discuss plant selection, ups and downs for annuals, bulbs, edibles, ground covers. Remember, my answers, comments, and opinions are not the only garden path to take, but strictly offered for you to consider. Alex is across the big board. He answers the phone and is producing today. So when you do call, just first name and where you're calling from. During the week, I do landscape consulting, which I call a walk and talk. I come and problem solve, aesthetic solving, or whatever it happens to be. Today, after the show, Kirkwood, and then south to Melville. So you can go to my website, MikeMillerDesigns.com. On the homepage, there's my email address and phone number, where I'll come and share 40-plus years of experience of professional stuff in the outdoors. Tip of the Trial is a special recognition individual, group, or situation that's made an impression on me, and it's brought to you by St. Louis Composting, 636-861-3344. Tip of the Trial is, guess what? It's going to the National Garden Clubs, Inc. It's headquartered here in St. Louis. It's right on the, actually on the edge of the garden grounds. It's along Magnolia. And it's one of the nation's most recognized nonprofits and largest volunteer gardening organizations in the world. And they've announced the 2020 winners of the highest honor, the Award of Excellence. This award recognizes exceptional individuals, organizations, and institutions that make significant contributions to their communities in the environment and civic responsibilities, conservation, community beautification, and promoting the love of gardening. And the award winners actually are William Radler. He turned a hobby into hybridizing roses, and guess what he's responsible for? The whole creation of the knockout roses. So that's William Radler. And then John Carr Loftus, and he's a landscape designer and author. He designed rooftops and small garden spaces in New York City for commercial and residential projects, and in his home state of Kentucky as well. And John Forte, author and garden historian at the museum in Massachusetts, and executive director of Bedrock Gardens in New Hampshire. So these are all three winners of the Award of Excellent Winners, and that's by the National Garden Clubs, Inc. And that is a great organization. They've been around since 1929. Wow, they're older than me. But anyway, it's a great organization. They've recently renovated, let's say, the outside. I don't know if they've done it to the inside. The landscape around their, you know, their building. They're on Magnolia, so they share the grounds with the Missouri Botanical Garden. So, tip of the trial goes out to that wonderful organization, the National Garden Clubs, Inc. So, Mike Miller, KMOS Garden Hotline. Let's see, why don't we take some calls? Let's go to Carol's yard. Hi, Carol.
Yes, hi, Mike.
Hi.
I have a question. I've got this Spectracide weed stop that kills nutgrass in your grass, but doesn't kill the weed.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, doesn't kill the grass. And it did a real good job last year. But now I have nutgrass in my daylilies. Can I use that for the daylilies?
Yeah, it's very specific on what it's going to go after. So if daylilies are in the same family group as lawn, so consequently it shouldn't have any impact on your daylilies. But what I would be concerned with is temperature-wise. So read the label very carefully and make sure that it's okay to spray it when the temperature is going to be whatever is going to happen to be, you know, that day, because you can do some damage to all kinds of different things, even though in theory it shouldn't damage, but it can due to the temperatures.
Yeah, it says to do it below 90 degrees.
Right.
Right. So I could spray it then on the daylilies.
Right. You should be able. I wouldn't do a whole bunch. I would just try it in one area to make sure and then go from there.
Okay, great. Thanks for your help.
Sure, my pleasure. And now let's head out to St. Charles into Doug's yard.
Yes, I have a question pertaining to Roundup. Is Roundup a pre-emergent, or can you spray it on existing plants?
It is not a pre-emergent whatsoever. You have to spray it on existing plants. It doesn't do anything at all if it doesn't, you know, get on the foliage of whatever you're trying to kill.
Okay, my other comment is, if people wonder about 1 inch of rain, most people have a Frisbee. I found that if you put a Frisbee out in the yard where the sprinkler works, when the Frisbee is filled with water, you've had 1 inch of rain.
All right. Perfect. I usually say just put a bowl in out there, but Frisbee sounds cooler.
Yeah. And it gives your dog something to play with.
Well, thanks, Doug. Greatly appreciate. And now let's head over to Holly's yard, and Holly lives in Chesterfield. Hi, Holly. Holly, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, go ahead.
Thank you for your show. Two questions. I put compost down on my yard, or have been for about the last 4 years, have an absolutely gorgeous yard. Question on that is, can I put it down, or does it do any good for the spring to put it down in the fall?
If you core-aerate or something so you can get the actually compost to drop down into the holes, that would be more beneficial. Top dressing, there's nothing wrong with doing that, but you just get more of a benefit if you core-aerate first, and especially if you have a cool-season lawn. So do you have fescue or bluegrass?
Fescue.
Okay, so then you should be fine doing it in the fall, whether you do the core-aeration or not.
Okay. I also have 14 hollies. I've called you before. when do I trim them? They've grown out of sight because of all the rain we had in the spring.
Right.
And I'm not quite sure this year when to cut them because they need so much cutting.
Right. Basically, if you can hold off, I'd wait until we come out of wintertime. That would be the ideal time to do it. So
come out of winter?
Right. So in other words, sometime in around Valentine's Day. Because we don't know what our weather's going to be like, so if you definitely don't want to prune during the heat of the summertime. But if you prune in the fall, and let's say you get them to the size and shape and everything you want, if we have a severe winter, you could cause some major damage to the stems and everything that's left, stems and foliage.
Okay, so basically I should cut like in February, March?
Right, exactly. Sometime around Valentine's Day before any kind of new growth begins, before the flowers open or anything.
Okay, so I can freeze my butt off.
Exactly.
You'll okay,
enjoy
thank,
it.
Thank you, Mike.
Sure, my pleasure.
Mm-hmm, bye-bye.
And let's do one more call, and let's go to Joan. Hi, Joan.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call. We have a hill in the back of our yard on which we have planted Baltic ivy, and it is doing very well. It is thriving, but unfortunately, so are weeds. Now, because of my age and limited physical ability, it's really difficult for me to be getting up there and pulling weeds. Could you recommend any kind of a weed killer that will kill the weeds but leave my ivy alone? Because the ivy is doing so well, I don't want to harm it.
Yeah, basically, you've got a real tough situation because I'm assuming most of the, if the, let's say the weeds are grassy weeds, you can actually get a grass killer, which will kill the grass but won't damage anything that has a broader leaf. But if these weeds are broadleaf weeds, then you got to be very cautious because it can damage, even without killing, your Baltic ivy. So that's the real trouble. If it's grassy, you can go to your favorite garden center and get a specific type of herbicide for killing grass that won't damage, broadleaf plants, so it won't damage your ivy. But if they're broadleaf, then you got real trouble.
A lot of it is clover.
Oh, that's tough. So if it's big patches of clover, what you could do is, get some Roundup and basically Roundup, if you get, a larger container on the nozzle, they're going to have a kind of a round disc that you can just set right on top of the plants that you want to have the Roundup to hit, and then it won't drift and get onto anything else.
So I have to determine if it's a grassy weed or a broadleaf.
Right. And if it's clover, also what you can do is get Roundup and you can paint it right onto the clover without damaging your, as long as you don't get it onto the, the ivy.
Okay. You've answered my question. Thank you very much.
Great. Mike Miller, KM West Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
Welcome back to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline. Once again, Mike Miller on KMOX.
That's pretty wild. Garage door month. I'm waiting for the back door month to come. Anyway, let's head over to Lucy's yard. Hi, Lucy.
I'm sorry. I've been on hold. I forgot what I was. Oh, I know. We have lavender plants.
Uh-huh.
And I was just wondering, where should they be planted? How often do they bloom? Because they look kind of pathetic.
Well, they bloom basically once a year. They should be in full sun all day long. They don't want a lot of fertilizer. They don't like a lot of water. They're sort of in that herb group, so they're one of the lower care plants. But full sun is almost, has to happen.
Okay, and they're already done blooming for the year, correct?
Pretty much. They may rebloom, but a reblooming is going to be pretty minimal.
Okay, that was helpful. And I just want to say, I'm not really a fan. My husband wakes me up to you every morning, and he's kind of got a man crush on you, so he couldn't make his own phone. Call because he thought he'd get speechless when you answered the phone. Thank you so much.
Well, thanks.
Okay, Mike. Thank you.
Sure. And now let's go over to Marge's yard. She lives in North County. Hi, Marge.
Hi, Mike. I have a question about daylilies. We put daylilies around the backyard about 25 or so years ago, and then gradually we were taught how to pollinate and make new colors and new lily plants.
Wow.
And this year, for the first time I've noticed, the flower stem comes up and the buds are on top. But now there are two or three offshoots coming off that original stem, and they also have buds. And I'm wondering, have they gone rogue, or is that normal?
That's not really normal. Usually the single stem's going to have just the cluster of flowers at the top.
Right.
So you've really hybridized these things, and you could give them your name and then start selling them and become rich.
Yeah, because I know one of them has five offshoots after the top one, and they all have buds on it.
You're kidding.
No, uh-uh.
That is a lot of flowers for a daylily.
Yeah, I couldn't believe it because it's the first time I ever saw it.
Right. To be honest with you, I've never seen it that I can think of.
Well, if I have a chance, I'll take a picture and send it to you.
Well, that sounds great. Also, I mean, there is a daylily society here. And you might contact them. You can go through the Missouri Botanical Garden and contact them and see what they say about it.
Oh, okay. That'd be great. And also, these lilies have been in years and years. I'm saying maybe like 25 years or so.
Mm-hmm.
And before that, we had iris in that place. And I have had iris foliage, and this year two flower stems come up after all these years.
Right.
And so did we just miss those bulbs and they hibernated that long?
No, basically they just kind of run out of energy as far as flowering goes. Usually it's about at the 10-year mark, sometimes a little bit longer. And
yeah,
there are people that have had them that didn't bloom for years, and then they started reblooming again, but that's not going to happen for the most part.
Yeah, well, we thought we took them all out before we put the daylilies in. Okay, Mike, thank you very much.
Sure, my pleasure.
Mm-hmm.
And now let's go over to Alan's yard. Hi, Alan.
Hi, Mike. Hi. Really appreciate your show.
No, thank you.
What is the most efficient way to eliminate voles, not moles, voles?
Well, voles are very lazy, so they only use mole tunnels. So you must have some tunnels there. Generally, the voles don't do much digging. So the best thing to do is to probably use just, like mouse rat traps, basically. Find out where the holes are. Usually the holes for the voles, are underneath shrubs and things like that. If you find out where the holes are, then that's where they go to sleep and stuff. Then just set the rat traps with some, cheese/peanut butter, on there, and then try to get them that way.
Yeah, because what they do is leave those bicycle tracks in the ground.
Yeah. Okay, well, one other question. What is the phone number to arrange a visit?
You can just go to my website, MikeMillerDesigns.com.
Okay, thank you, Mike.
Yeah, on the homepage, that'll have my phone number and email address.
Okay, thank you much.
Yep, and let's see if we can get another call in. Yes, we can, and let's go to Joanne's yard. Hi, Joanne.
Hi, Mike. Thanks for your service. I would like to know, I have a magnolia tree that's probably been in the ground maybe 3 years, and it's got a lot of the branches that are down towards the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
When can I trim those off?
You really do it any time. Now, I would say leave them on and do the pruning next year after they finish flowering, so that way you can have the maximum amount of flowers that you possibly could.
Okay, could I prune them? They're flowering right now quite a bit.
Oh, so they're summer bloomers.
So yeah.
I would wait until they finish flowering and then go ahead and prune them at that time.
And then should I put that tar stuff on?
No, that doesn't do a thing. That's horrible.
Oh, it doesn't do a thing. Okay.
No.
All right.
Thank you
so much. I'll wait till it's just beautiful. They must have about 10 flowers on it right now.
Wow, great.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Okay, well, thank you.
Sure.
Have a good day.
Yeah, my pleasure. Yeah, the pruning sealers and all that other stuff days of old had lead in it, which they had to take out because of, environmental problems. But for the most part, it doesn't do anything. If you don't like looking at a raw wound, what you want to do is just take your finger, push it down in some dirt, and just cover it up that way. But also, don't leave a big stub, if you're cutting off on your magnolia. You only want to leave about a quarter to a half inch stub, whatever the largest, if you're cutting off the trunk or a larger branch or something else. You don't want a big stub sticking out. And let's go out to Mike's yard in Baldwin. Hi, Mike.
Double knockout roses that are really blooming well this year, but there's some sort of bug attacking them. It's eating the leaves, and I sprayed them with this rose. You mix up this stuff from, I think it's Bayer, and I sprayed them with that, and it seemed to take care of it for a minute, but now they're back again. I'm wondering what, and I got black spots all over the stems. What's the problem there?
That sounds like fungus, and as far as the black spots, if you're going to spray an insecticide, for the most part, the insecticides that you spray on the plants have contact with the bug, or it doesn't do any good. What you can do is get a systemic type, insecticide. So in other words, you mix it in water, pour it around the root system, it goes up through the plant, and then will kill, the insect as it eats on anything. So, but other than that, the insecticides, got to actually hit, contact the bug, or doesn't do a bit of good.
Oh, okay. Now, other question. I got a bunch of mulch around there. Should I remove that? This is red mulch I bought from Lowe's or whatever. And maybe I've got it maybe 3 inches thick. And you think that could be a problem as well?
No, that's not going to cause a problem for your plants for the most part. I wouldn't necessarily have it right up next to the roses, the stems coming up out of the ground. But other than that, 3 inches is not an exorbitant amount.
Okay. All right. Thank you, sir.
Yep. So, you know, you could have an anthracnose, but for the most part, it sounds like if you've got, let's say, discolored spots on the leaves and everything else, you may not have insects at all. You may have anthracnose. So look at anthracnose on roses and see online and see how that looks. Mike Miller, KMOR's Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
Welcome back to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline. Once again, Mike Miller on KMOX.
Yes, folks, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. We've got a few lines open, so if you've got a question, concern, or comment, please give us a call. And now let's head out to Afton and go into Ted's yard. Hi, Ted.
Oh, Mike, how are you today?
Very good.
Good. Hey, I have a maple tree. It's probably about 25 years old. It's been planted in a some concrete block circle rings, about a 10-foot diameter, and they're only about 10 inches high. But the roots are coming across the surface, you know, about a half an inch wide or whatever, and they're starting to disrupt the concrete blocks. Is there anything I can do about that to make sure I don't have to redo the concrete block? Can I cut the roots or anything, the ones that are going across the top like that?
You shouldn't be doing that. You shouldn't cut the roots because, I mean, those roots on the surface are for lots of different reasons, but the main thing they're importance is those are where the feeder roots are. So not the ones that you're seeing, but at the end of those roots, that's where the feeders are. So there's not too much you can really do, to be honest with you. You start cutting the roots, then you're starting to mess up, let's say, the equal amount of above ground growth and below ground growth, and that could lead to sort of a decline of the tree.
Okay, so just move the blocks then, if anything, huh?
Right, exactly.
Okay, well,
maybe even take them out entirely. I don't know if you have a ground cover in the, you know, inside the blocks going up to the trunk, but maybe just think about taking the blocks out and just, you know, put a ground cover around it. And just realize a surface rooting is just something that's going to happen, especially in this region with, in theory, our clay soils. But it happens any place.
Okay. Well, not what I wanted to hear, but I won't touch it then. Thank you very much for your help.
Sure. And let's go from Afton northward to Ferguson into Rick's yard. Hi, Rick.
Hi, Mike. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
A little while ago, you had a call from a lady that was complaining about having weeds and clover growing up through her ivy.
Right.
And we've talked about this before on your show, that tricloper ester is purported to treat broadleaf weeds, including clover. And I've not used it, but that's what the information on the website says. So that's just a little bit of information there. She can go to domyown.com. And there's all kinds of information there about that.
Right. But that product's a little difficult to, you know, find and to get, and it's very expensive, too.
Okay.
So, but thanks for the insight. Greatly appreciate
it. Good thing. Thanks. Bye.
Sure. And now let's head over to Nancy's yard. Hi, Nancy.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. We recently purchased some land in the Belleville area, and we're looking to put in apple trees. So I just like some suggestions on bare root versus a potted, and where's the best place to get them, and can I put them in this fall?
This fall, you could certainly plant them. Bare root, you know, I wouldn't do bare root in the fall, though. I do bare root in the springtime. And as far as variety-wise, do you know which varieties you want?
I was going to do a mixture, like probably do 6 to 8 trees.
Okay. I would, you know, you could even just go, if you want success, maybe check out Eckert's and see what kind of apple trees they're growing and grow those varieties.
Oh, okay. That's a good idea.
But basically, bare root is springtime, and I don't even know if they're going to be available in the fall. So it'd be potted ones if you're trying to get them in the ground this fall.
Okay. Thanks a lot. That's what I needed to know.
Sure.
I appreciate it.
Yeah.
All righty.
You can't beat Eckert's as far as fruit production. I mean, it goes on and on and on and on. Great area. And now let's go to Crestwood into Mary's yard. Hi, Mary.
Hi. I have nutsedge in my flower beds. What can I do to get just the nutsedge out?
There's several products by several companies that are just nutsedge killers that won't damage other plant material. So you can go to your favorite garden center and tell them you have nutsedge, and see what kind of product they have that's, you know, like sedge ender, sedge killer, whatever it happens to be.
Okay, and then I can just spray it just on that because it will kill the flowers, right?
Yeah, it won't kill anything but nut sedge.
Okay, thank you.
Certainly, my pleasure. And now let's go to Dennis's yard. Hi, Dennis.
Good morning, Mike.
Hi.
Greetings from O'Fallon, Illinois, Illinois. I've got a property line 50 feet wide in my backyard. That property line has got a fence that sits 5 feet inside from my property line. The outside area of my fence is a swell. It's a berm, if you will. It's a mound. It's about maybe a 30-degree slope, if you will. I have trouble cutting that because the lawnmower banging into the fence at the end, at the foot of the fence, or the handlebars banging into it. I want to give up all that grass and convert it to something that's going to be no maintenance, does not encroach on neighbors, and prevents erosion. What say you, doctor?
Basically, now this will be somewhat invasive, but it's not horribly invasive. But I look at a type of liriope or monkey grass or lily turf, but get the spicata variety. L-I-R-I-O-P-E, and then spicata, S-P-I-C-A-T-A. It's
I'm sorry, Mike. You got to do that again for me. I'm sorry. Say it again.
It's L-I-R-I-O-P-E, liriope, and then you want the spreading type, which is its species is spicata, S-P-I-C-A-T-A.
Great.
And you can buy it in flats. It's tough. It's durable. It can hold the slopes. It's the variety of plant that they use in the botanical garden, in the Japanese garden, to maintain stability on the slopes around the Japanese garden.
Does it require maintenance? Does it have to be watered and so on and so forth?
Well, initially, the first, you know, until it's established for the first 2 years, yes. After that, okay. No.
All right. And do I go ahead and scrub the grass? Do I take the grass out, or do I just plant into that?
If you plant into it, it's going to be problematic because the grass could get taller than what this is going to be. So, and they both have narrow blades, so you can't put a grass killer on it because it's going to, you know, affect your liriope. So rather than trying to do this all at once, I do sections at a time. Kill off the area right before you plant. You can get this plant in, you know, in three inch pots. You can get it in flats. You can get it in 1 gallon pots as well. And just depends upon how fast you want it to fill in. That's how close you put the plants together.
Perfect. And when you say kill off the grass, can I spray it, or do I need to dig it up?
No, no. You can just spray it.
And that won't fertilize the ground then for the.
No, generally,
okay.
For the most part, herbicides do not have a residual effect into the ground.
Good. Easy job. Nothing to it, right?
Right.
Mike, you're my man. Thanks so much. Have a good day.
Well, thank you. And it's a lucky thing all the gyms are closed. Now you can build up your biceps with all this work you're going to be doing. Because 50 feet is quite a distance. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
Welcome back to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline. Once again, Mike Miller on KMOX.
Let's head out to Ron's yard. Hi, Ron.
Hey, Mike.
Hi.
How you doing?
Good.
Good. Two quick questions. When I play golf on a hot summer afternoon, you see the grounds crew out there periodically watering down the greens, and I was always assuming that was to cool things down. Is that same concept okay for our flowers and shrubs and things like that?
Well, to be honest with you, I usually work in the yard after I go for my walk and talks. So the majority of my watering I do kind of in the heat of the day. So, I mean, all my stuff looks pretty good, let's put it that way.
Okay. And then my second question, our knockout roses have gone through their first flowering stage, and I've cut the dead flowers off.
Right.
And now they're starting to go through their growth stage. Is that what I do, just cut the flowers off, or do I actually cut the shrubs back?
You don't have to cut the shrubs back, but you got to go a little bit below where, let's say, the actual flowers were or flower was. So, in other words, go down to the a leaflet that has 5 leaves on it and cut it at that point and cut it at a 45-degree angle. And I'm assuming you're using some rose food on them as well. Okay,
yeah,
so then that's right. This would be the time when you've cut them, you're starting to see some maybe new growth occurring. This is the time to feed them again.
Okay, great. Thanks, Mike.
Yep. And speaking of, let's say knockout roses, I was at a home They didn't have knockout roses. She had carpet roses, but she had a circumstance where the carpet roses had rose rosette. And it was devastating because these were in a very important place. And she probably had like about nine or so. And only about three or four of them were infected right at that moment with the rose rosette. But I said, these are, you know, and I told her to look down here real close. You could see the spider webs there. So from the spider mites, not from regular spiders. And the spider mites are what spreads the rose rosette. And once a rose has the rose rosette inside of its interior and veins and everything else, that rose has got to be a goner. So I had to tell her that I'm sorry, they all should be pulled out. And especially from the standpoint, she had a neighbor just across the way that had some roses that weren't showing any signs of it yet. I say, not only are you going to get rid of them, you know, from the standpoint that they're going to all go downhill and look really creepy and ugly, but also you're doing it to the advantage of your neighbor as well. Then once you take out those roses, you can put new roses back in there. You just don't, because some people think it's related to soil or anything else. No, it's really interior in the roses. So now let's head out to Washington, Missouri, and go into Matt's yard. Hi, Matt.
Good morning.
Hi.
Hey, I think it's a red oak. We were at the Botanical Garden at Shaw's last fall, and they allowed us to pick up some acorns, and I planted them. And I've got, I think it's a red oak. It's about 2 foot tall in a pot.
Mm-hmm.
But when do I plant that in the yard?
You can do it in the fall. I would say just leave it alone, or you can grow it a couple years in the pot if you'd like. It's really up to you. But if you're going to grow it in the pot, probably for wintertime, I dig a hole and then just drop the pot down into a hole.
Okay. And put it in a bigger pot maybe for next year?
Because
it's in about a 12-incher.
That should be adequate for a couple years, okay, to be honest with you.
All right. Perfect. Thank you.
Yep. My pleasure. That was nice. You got some botanical garden trees. And let's head over to Edwardsville and go into Jeff's yard. Hi, Jeff.
Yes, Mike, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. I've got a couple questions here. First of all, I buy some sod from Brockmeyer Sod Farm, and they said do not water your grass in the heat of the day. I mean, maybe cool it off with a little thing, but always water grass at, she said, for new sod, start maybe 5 or 6 o'clock in the evening when the sun is going down, and then on a sprinkler system in the middle of the night, but never in the daytime. And I'd like to know, what is the proper time to perhaps mow the grass? Do I mow the grass in the morning when it's wet, or do I wait for it to dry off and mow in the afternoons? And my final question is, we've done a great job with hummingbirds over the years, but this year, we've got a great setup for a lot of hummingbirds, but we have basically two hummingbirds, and one of them is a bully, and this one male just runs everybody else off, and consequently, we have no hummingbirds this year other than the one male and maybe a stray that shows up. So maybe your listening audience could give us some hints on what to do. We've had as many as 12 hummingbirds in the past, and this year it's just two. And we don't understand what we're doing wrong. We've got multiple places for them to feed and everything. So maybe your listening audience can help us out. I enjoy your show. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you. I greatly appreciate it. Yeah, and in relationship to watering your lawn, you know, I don't, like I said, because of my situation and everything else, I have to water in the heat of the day. It's not the ideal time, but I don't like to water going into nighttime myself, because that sets up a scenario with fungus problems, and especially if you have bluegrass and things like that. But you spoke to the people at a sod farm. Obviously, they know what they're doing. And I'm assuming that they water at nighttime for their own sod farm. And, with a hummingbird bully, that's a tough one. I've never really known that, because usually they're only migratory. They're only coming through for a period of time, and then they move on heading north this time of year. So that's really surprising, this one's hanging around. And as far as, you know, I guess he really likes your mixture, your formula. It's the best wine he's ever had. But, and also cutting your grass, if it's wet, sometimes if it's too damp, it could be problematic from that standpoint that it just kind of sticks on the inside of your mower, whether it's in the bag or anything else.
Okay, thank you.
Yep, and Barb, if you can do it quickly, we can get you in today.
Yes. Do you deadhead verbena?
Verbena, you don't have to, but it's, you know, certainly would help just overall from an aesthetic standpoint.
Do you deadhead drift roses?
Any kind of roses, yes, definitely.
Okie dokie. Basically, things need to be deadheaded after they bloom if you're going to get more out of them.
Right, and even if they don't, let's say, you know, the verbena generally doesn't, you know, I mean, it should, those blooms last for a long, long time. And if you don't cut them off, then what you're looking at is just icky stuff. So by cutting it off, it's more of an aesthetic deal than it is actually helping, let's say, the plant, let's say, rebloom. Certain plants definitely have to be, have to be deadheaded to trigger the next, let's say, generation of flowering, like with the roses. But okay. For, you know, the verbenas, they don't have to, but it just looks a lot better if you do.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep, my pleasure. And everybody, that's going to be our last caller of the day, so I appreciate everybody that calls in. And a tip of the trowel to everybody. I mean, this has been a very, very difficult circumstance as far as garden center-wise and everything else. And they're still having some trouble with, just making it a little bit difficult, you know, to get into, let's say, the garden centers other than the big box stores. And, take care of your local garden center because they're local. They have, I mean, very knowledgeable staff, nothing against the big box stores. But, I drive by some of them and they've got everything kind of, let's say, ribboned off some of them. And as a result, it makes it somewhat difficult to get in there. You can still do some planting this time of year, but it's really tough. If you're going to do any kind of planting, it would be, you know, kind of the annual circumstance or elephant ears or canna bulbs or things along that line. Any kind of woody plant material, I would not plant going into summertime. And I'm going to emphasize this again. Watering, even if they're predicting rain, is very, very good because it softens, opens up all the ground. So when it does rain, it, you know, gets deeper into the soil. And it's got to get down there to keep the root systems looking really good. So everybody have a good day and happy, not birthday, not yet, not the 4th of July. Mike Miller, KMR's Garden Hotline.